the rivalry is back on.
Indianapolis Colts GM Chris Ballard throws down the gauntlet, reacting to Josh McDaniels changing his mind to leave the Patriots to become head coach of the Colts. It's Thursday, February 8th. I'm Chris Gasper. Welcome to Season Ticket. I'm joined now by Boston Globe senior columnist Dan Shaughnessy. He's going to talk about Josh McDaniels weaseling out of this job and electing to stay with the Patriots, stay with Tom Brady, stay with Bill Belichick. Obviously, good news for the Patriots, but it paints McDaniels in a bad light, Dan.
Yeah, this is one of the reasons people hate the Patriots around the country, and there's so much celebrating going on since they lost the Super Bowl on Sunday. Today's parade day in Philadelphia, and yet it's been nothing but Patriot talk around the country, particularly here, since Sunday. It's been one thing after another. You can talk about the Butler thing. You can talk about the McDaniel thing. But they are a focal point around the country for what's been happening in Foxborough since they lost the Super Bowl that night. And this thing, I tweeted this last night, again, a weasel move by Josh McDaniel. No appetite for this, to the point where his own agent has dropped him because he said, you know, my word is all I've got. And we've seen things before, Chris, where, you know, Billy Beane took a job here with the Red Sox, turned it down, went back and, you know, honored that for the next 15 years, what have you. Bill Belichick, as we know, had the goofy twice being coach of the Jets and never coaching a day for him and the abrupt departure. This one just is a little bit extraordinary, I think, because it was so late in the game and that the Patriots didn't tell McDaniel how badly they wanted him until he had already committed to the other place. So what's up with that?
Yeah, I mean, that is strange. He went in to clean out his office on Tuesday, and he was doing that at Gillette Stadium. And the Krafts and Bill Belichick said, hey, let's have a conversation here. And the conversation was to convince him to stay, and obviously they did. I mean, there were assistant coaches who had signed contracts that Josh McDaniels had recruited. They ended up having signed contracts with the Colts. Those people are now stuck. Chris Ballard said that they would honor those contracts, but that has to be awkward. Whoever the new coach is coming in now doesn't really get to pick his own staff. He's saddled with these guys, including Dave DeGuglielmo, the former Patriots offensive line coach who signed on to have the same job in Indianapolis with Josh McDaniels, except Josh McDaniels isn't going to be the coach. At the end of the day here, Dan, why do you think Josh McDaniels backed out of this Colts job and decided to stay with the Patriots? There has to be more to this.
Well, there always has to be more. And I think, first of all, we have to acknowledge, you know, nobody really cares in our market. Nobody really cares about the woes of the Colts, the poor Colts. It's like
Sure. People
are like, oh, good, screw them. Yeah. You know, they started Deflategate and, you know, they changed the rules for
this has come up for the Colts in a lot of people's minds.
Right. And, you know, and you can go back to the 80s when they moved the franchise, the Baltimore Colts. They did the people
in the middle of the night with the Mayflower fan.
Right, yeah. Under the cover of darkness. So no one's feeling bad for the Colts. Let's get that straight. But it's a bad optic for the Patriots. It's a bad optic around the league. It's like doing business the way you do business. And they do business to take care of the Patriots and the Patriots only with no thought for anybody else. And I suppose that's why you love them here. That's great. But this is not the way you do business in general. And the notion that this came up at the last minute, it looks to me like Bob Kraft, this is the ongoing, I don't want to use the word feud, but dysfunction, whatever you want to call it, that you're choosing sides over there in Gillette now, and you are either in the Brady camp or in the Belichick camp. This looks like more of a split on that Tom wanted his guy, Josh, and that they wanted some leverage over Bill so that if they have McDaniels in the fold, Bill has less leverage to play to use them. I want more money. I want this. I want that. I want control. It's like, well, Bill, we got your successor right here, and you know, so you can't really hold that gun to our heads anymore.
Yeah, it certainly helps the Patriots in terms of a succession plan for Bill Belichick. And now you have a guy in place who is comfortable and really close with the quarterback. And I think that's important, that if Bill Belichick is going year to year now and is going to walk away at some point, whether it's after 2018 or 2019 or 2020, you have Jonathan Kraft came out and said that Tom Brady has earned the right at this point in his career to decide when he no longer wants to play for the Patriots. So what they've said is there's this player on the roster by the name of Tom Brady, who is outside the control of Bill Belichick. Like, Bill Belichick looks at it every year and says everybody has to fight for their job. Ownership's saying, no, Tom Brady decides when he doesn't want to do this job anymore. And that's a very different dynamic, I think, in Foxborough, and that's what you're talking about. If there's sort of a situation down there where there's a battle for control, a battle for the top spot on the masthead and the marquee, I think Brady has won that battle this year. The Krafts have backed him. That's the candidate that they're backing. And having McDaniels here certainly helps Tom Brady in that regard to what you said. And it's an interesting dynamic again. Like I said, with Bill Belichick, there's no way he's ever going to want a situation where there's a player on the roster who essentially is outside his control. And that's That's where Brady is right now.
Yes, he is the king. He rules all in Foxborough, and that's fine. He's earned that. 5 Super Bowls, been to 8, the whole bit. That's there. But I think that as you look forward as a Patriot fan, what do you want out of your leadership here? Is Josh McDaniel a leader of men? Has he had any demonstration that he can do that? He went to Denver. He failed. He was a coordinator of Kansas City. He failed. St. Louis.
Yeah.
Now he's here, and we don't know what kind of a head coach he can be or leader he can be, and he's probably not going to have Tom Brady as his quarterback when he gets to this, unless Bill resigns next week or does one more year. I'm just not sure, but Josh has hitched his wagon to the Crafts.
Yes.
And they to him. He is the next guy. That's what it's going to be, and we just don't know when this will be or who his quarterback will be by the time he becomes coach.
Well, what does it say about the Colts that you have a situation where McDaniels would rather wait his turn behind Belichick, not sure when Belichick is going to retire, and roll the dice with a 41-year-old Tom Brady, then go to your team? That says something about the Colts. It says something about the composition of their roster. It says something about the ownership stability there with Irsay. It says something about the questions about Andrew Luck's health. Because if Andrew Luck is healthy, completely healthy, and there's no question mark about him playing next year, and one thing Chris Ballard said in this press conference is that Andrew Luck's not at the point where he's throwing a football yet. So I wonder if that was a factor here as well. We look at it, it's so Patriot-centric, but was it easier for the Patriots to woo Josh back when he's starting to hear stuff about Andrew Luck, including a report from Chris Mortensen of ESPN on Sunday that Andrew Luck might need additional medical attention here to fix that shoulder? That's not good, because if you're going there, you're going there for Andrew Luck. The rest of that roster, I mean, T.Y. Hilton's a good player, but the rest of that roster, I don't want to call it a disaster that strong. It needs a lot of work.
Right. Work to be done there, and they're also in a division. It's much harder to win.
Absolutely.
Teams on the rise, teams that are already good. Jacksonville's in that division. Mariota's in that division. I mean, there's guys that you're going to have to contend with the Patriots. You're in the tomato can division, the all-time of all time, when you've got a coach and a quarterback figuring it out, new guy on each team every year, and no threat to challenge you in the division. So you're going to look a lot better as head coach of the Patriots in the near future than you are as head coach of the Colts.
Yeah, and I'll just say on McDaniels, you mentioned sort of needing to be a leader of men and all that stuff. He just needs to be George Seifert. You know, George Seifert replaced Bill Walsh. The system was in place. It was literally, don't muck it up. That's all he has to do.
Barry Switzer?
Yeah, Barry Switzer, going with Jimmy Johnson. I mean, because I think Brady will still be there.
Sure.
Nick Caserio will be there to do the player personnel. They'll still have a strong team. All he has to do is not mess it up in the first couple of years.
Well, what do you think? Is there a chance that Bill Belichick is going to not be coach of this team next year?
In 2018?
Next year.
I think Bill's back in 2018.
Okay.
After that, I think all bets are off.
What if it's next week or the week after? What if Bill just says, that's it, I'm out of
here? Well, look, that's Bill's prerogative. And again, same thing. Josh McDaniels. Here's the league MVP and Tom Brady.
Yeah.
Here, you're getting Julian Edelman back. Here's this team. Just be George Seifert, and you should be in the AFC title game for an 8th consecutive season. Like, you don't have to be a great coach. You know, all he has to do is placate Brady and not mess things up, and they should be good to go.
Okay, I'll go along with that.
Yeah, I mean, that's the way I look at it. And I do want to mention this, because you mentioned Bob Lamonte, the agent for Josh McDaniels, firing him as a client, essentially. Bob Lamonte is also the agent for Chris Ballard. So Josh McDaniels put another Bob Lamonte client in a really, really bad situation. I think that's part of it. I want to ask you quickly what you think about the Malcolm Butler situation.
Oh, my God.
Butler obviously came out with a statement that a lot of Patriots players liked, basically saying that there was nothing in terms of him doing something that necessitated any sort of discipline. He didn't go to any concert. He didn't miss a curfew or participate in any of the ridiculous activities being reported. As he said, they are not only false, but hurtful to me and my family. So are you believing Malcolm Butler here? Well, do you think that this was something that was beyond a football decision by Bill Belichick?
Well, it's been 2 days since that statement was issued by Butler, and no one has come forward with, say, hey, here's video of you at the concert, or one of a teammate saying, hey, this guy's, you know, he broke all the rules, he deserves what he got. No one has come forward with that. Instead, we have had, as you pointed out, players come out in support of him.
Including Tom Brady.
Including Tom Brady, including Gronk, including Hightower, you know, their best players. So this looks to me like, now it's back on Bill. It is what he said it was. It's a football decision. Well, no one's understanding that or buying that. This is Bill's Grady little moment, and he's not being forced to be accountable on it. The notion that things could have changed so dramatically, bad week of practice, between the Jacksonville game when he plays every defensive snap and the next game, and no adjustment when you're getting gashed and gutted by Philadelphia and guys arm tackling, and you've got a guy who, at his worst, can at least tackle, and to not use him in the game, it looks petty, it looks punitive, and Bill doesn't have to explain himself.
Yeah, I mean, that's the way it works around here. I agree with you on that. I think this is one of these things where these contract situations fester in Foxborough all season long. And sometimes Bill takes it personally when a player does not accept the contract that he puts out there, doesn't accept the assigned value that Belichick has deemed the player should have. And it's one of those situations where, look, Malcolm Butler didn't play as well this year, but I didn't think that he got to a point where he needed to be benched. And as you mentioned, at some point in that game, the Eagles scored on their last five possessions in all four possessions in the second half. The Patriots are the first team in 40 games to have 600 yards of offense in NFL history and lose the game. Brady is the first quarterback in NFL history to throw for more than 500 yards and three touchdowns with no interceptions and lose the game. At some point, you had to say, forget it. You know, break glass in case of emergency. Malcolm, you're in. Belichick never did that. I think he made it personal, and I think that's a huge mistake. All right, you mentioned Grady Little there. That's a great segue for us, Dan. We're going to switch things over to the Red Sox. We're going to talk a little, I guess, is it still hot stove? Can you still say it's hot stove? We're less than a week away from spring training. I guess we'll call it hot stove. There's nothing going on with the free agents in Major League Baseball, and we want to talk about why. That's next. Welcome back. We're talking with Dan Shaughnessy. And as I mentioned, we're going to switch things over to baseball. Spring training, less than a week away, February 14th. Pitchers and catchers have their first workout. But there's still a lot of unsigned guys here, Dan, in Major League Baseball. And that's a source of consternation for the MLB Players Association and Executive Director Tony Clark. He released a statement where he fired back at Major League Baseball and owners, saying it's a race to the bottom when it comes to salaries and that there are teams that are tanking. Major League Baseball came out and they rebutted that and saying that their clubs are committed to putting a winning product on the field. And it's common at this point in the calendar to have large numbers of free agents unsigned. What is uncommon is to have some of the best free agents sitting unsigned, even though they have substantial offers, some in nine figures. What's going on here, Dan?
Well, I mean, it's probably an unspoken collusion. I think they're smart enough now to not have a paper trail, you know, emails, phone conversations, recordings, texts, what have you, saying, hey, let's not bid on these guys. Let's everybody just suppress the market and they'll come crawling back. I think that is what's happened. I thought that's what happened 30 years ago when it really was collusion. There was a paper trail and they got caught and they were sanctioned. But in this case, to me, it's market correction. I tend to be sort of a stooge for management on this stuff because I'm looking at J.D. Martinez. He's been offered 5 years, $125 million. Too bad. That's not good enough. Too bad. I'm not going to 7 years on this. I don't want to look at the last year, 6 and 7 of J.D. Martinez on that contract. We've seen it with Pablo Sandoval. We've seen it with Hanley Ramirez in this market. You can go back to J.D. Drew. It doesn't look good at the end. I understand owners, you know, smartening up on this, you know, and just slowing the train down. I don't think with the Red Sox, that's not a rush to the bottom. They won 93 games the last 2 years. They don't need J.D. Martinez to keep from winning 72 games and to stay out of the basement and, you know, steal money with the luxury tax threshold and the revenue sharing and all that sort of thing. That is happening with some franchises. You could point to, you know, and maybe Tampa.
How about Miami?
Sure.
That's a joke.
Absolutely.
That's an absolute joke what Derek Jeter's doing down
there.
They've strip mined that team.
It is, and it's a disgrace, and I don't know why they have any fans or how they explain this to their fans. That is absolutely true. But league-wide, I don't think the players have a good argument on this thing. You have to come back. And a guy like Eric Hosmer, who's a really good player,
yeah,
he should be signed. I mean, that doesn't make any sense.
Well, there's a couple of things here to me, Dan. I think one is in this new CBA, which the players agreed to. I mean, that's the reality. The players agreed to this CBA. But the luxury tax is a much more onerous mechanism than it was in the past. And I think when you see teams like the Dodgers and the Yankees sitting out free agency, one of the great advantages of being the Dodgers or the Yankees or even the Red Sox is that some of those bad contracts you mentioned, like Pablo Sandoval, Hanley Ramirez, at the end of the day, those teams can afford to eat those contracts.
Yeah, it doesn't sink you.
Yeah, it doesn't sink you. Where if you're Kansas City, you're done. That sinks you from a budget standpoint. That's the advantage. These teams are willing to forfeit that advantage, which is a competitive advantage, because they're so afraid of this luxury tax. And it's because when you look at it, if you go over the first time, it's 20%. And then it increases to 30% for the second time. Then it's 50% if you go over in three straight years. And then there's an additional 12% added on when you exceed the luxury tax by $20 million to $40 million. And if you go more than $40 million over, which in the past the Dodgers have had no problem blowing past that number, they've gone to like $325 million. But if you go $40 million over the luxury tax threshold, which for 2018 is $197 million, that's only $2 million more than it was in 2017, your draft pick falls 10 spots. Your first draft pick falls 10 spots. So I think this is a really onerous mechanism, and it has a lot to do with what's going on in terms of suppressing the free agent market. I look at it this way. Tony Clark, who's the director of the MLB Players Association, he was once with the Red Sox in 2002. He played 90 games. He had 207, 57 hits, 57 strikeouts. He struck out negotiating this CBA. This is a terrible CBA for the players, and you're seeing it. You're seeing the manifestation of that this offseason. I don't think it's so much collusion as that baseball now has a salary cap. It's not a salary cap in name, but it's a salary cap in reality, and the players are finding that out.
I think you've done a good job boiling this down, really, with the numbers and the motivations. So you can go back and say this never would have happened with Marvin Miller or Donald Fear, that Tony Clark, you know, not savvy enough to strike a deal that's not going to come back and bite the membership. And we've been seeing this with the NFL for decades and decades. This is bad leadership by the players' union, and they're paying the price now. Too bad.
Yeah, I mean, you know, you're in the Baseball Hall of Fame, and I think Marvin Miller is somebody who should be in there.
Oh, my God, that's a joke that he's not in there.
And what do you think, if Marvin Miller were still alive, what do you think he would feel about a CBA where there are qualifying offers for free agents, there is draft pick compensation if you sign a free agent? We just mentioned how onerous the luxury tax thresholds are. There is no more Daisuke Matsuzaka international bidding. There's like a cap on that. If you get players internationally from like South America, there's a cap on that. There's now a cap on if you draft players, you get the draft pool. You can only spend so much money. Each team here is allotted a certain amount of money to spend on their draft picks. Like, everything is capped. This guy was so, like, a salary cap to this guy was complete anathema. And now they have a salary cap in almost every single function of the game where players can get paid.
I can tell you, Marvin would be smirking and twirling his little mustache there and saying, why did we ever agree to this? How did you guys lose the hammer?
Yeah, I mean, it's just unbelievable to me. And I think this is one of those things. Tony Clark was a super nice guy. Super nice guy. But I think this is one of the reasons why you need somebody with a legal background, somebody with a business background, just taking an ex-player and making them the executive director of the Players Association. And it's not even just that, too. I mean, we've talked about this is a bad deal for them. It goes through 2021. But let me just read to you the luxury tax thresholds as they were negotiated in the new deal. So 195 in 2017, then 197. It went up $2 million. That's it. Then it goes up to 206. Then it's 208, and the last year of the deal, it's 210. Those are not really substantial increases, especially at a time when Major League Baseball franchises are more valuable than ever. And when you look at Major League Baseball, they're making more money than ever. This is a steal for the owners. I mean, this is incredible. This is like, what's the season Ricky Henderson set the steals record?
Oh, like 20 years ago.
Yeah, I mean, this is like that type of season. You know, this is Ricky Henderson stealing 100-and-something bases here. It's unbelievable to me how one-sided this deal is. And now the players are finding it out. So if I were the players, I'd be angry at my union, not just angry at the owners in terms of resetting this luxury tax. The other thing I want to ask you, Dan, do you think any part of this is that free agent class next year is really star-studded with Harper and Machado and people trying to save money for that?
That's the best face you can put on it, is the teams are just waiting. They're going to break the bank next year for those guys. And I'm not sure that that's true, but it's been a believable argument, plausible deniability on the part of the owners that they can say that and that fans might be buying that. Some of the fans are buying that here. You could have that. But at the end of the day, I think what you've hit on is true. And I think that this is why in 1964, Jim Bunning, the pitcher, goes out and gets Marvin Miller of U.S. Steel to represent them. You don't have an ex-player taking on the task here who's in over his head. So they need better leadership with this, and this will be an issue for the next CBA.
Do you, just quickly, or do you at all blame Scott Boras? I mean, he's telling these guys what they should get paid, and he's telling them what they should get paid based off an old market model.
I always blame Scott Boras, and he's always smiling like the Cheshire Cat at the end of the day, so it's hard to do, but it always looks like, okay, Scott, this time you played your hand too far. The guys are going to be sitting there when the season starts. See what you say then.
Yeah, it's really interesting. J.D. Martinez not signed, Eric Hosmer, Mike Moustakas, Alex Cobb, Yu Darvish, Lance Lynn, Jake Arrieta. There's like an all-star team of guys who are unsigned here as we come up to the start of spring training. All right, Dan, this was fun. Thanks for dropping by.
Anytime. Always a pleasure to be here on Season Ticket.
All right, thanks. We appreciate it, Dan. You can find Dan on Twitter as well. It's Dan_Shaughnessy. All right, that's it for this edition of Season Ticket, a production of the Boston Globe and WBUR, Boston's NPR news station. I'm Chris Gasper. We'll catch you tomorrow.